look at what's happening across Connecticut. Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Governor Lamont, it's been a hot second. How are you?
Melissa, I can't believe that Dorothy Judy Garland is 100 years old.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Right?
Yeah.
I know, it's crazy. How are you? Congratulations on your reelection. I literally have not spoken to you since September, I think.
Hey, thank you, Melissa. It's nice to have the campaign over with, and let's just focus on Connecticut here.
Yeah, I would think so. So congratulations again. Let's get right into it. I know that we are in the midst of a special session. First of all, that's kind of confusing for people. Was the special session just a one-day thing, or is it still continuing this week?
No, it was just yesterday,
okay.
And on strong bipartisan basis, it passed really a couple hundred million dollars in tax cuts that will make life a little more affordable given the high price of ongoing gasoline and now electric prices.
Let's talk about the electric prices. We were reading this morning that if you are low to middle income households, you could qualify for these electricity bill relief program. I know that that's being put forward to PURA to even get the stamp of approval. But what is considered a low to middle income household so that people can prepare properly if they would qualify or not?
Yeah, Melissa. So we have two programs. One is called LIHEAP, or Connecticut Energy Assistance, and that covers families of four up to $75,000 if they need some support, fill up, you know, half their oil tank or fill up their tank, depending on. And then we also have another program called Operation Fuel, and that is good for up to $95,000. I'm going to try and get that up to $125,000 in annual income. Just to, if you are in need and you don't think you have the resources necessary to fill your oil tank, let us help out.
So again, it sounds like it's just short of $100,000. That's like the threshold right now.
That's about right.
Okay. Now that's just for your home heating, or is that also that's for Eversource and for UI? Like, is that compensating what their price hikes are looking like starting in January?
Yeah, the ones I just mentioned are home heating. That
okay.
could be electric heating or oil heating. And then you also have Eversource and UI. They've applied for probably a 40-45% rate increase, an enormous rate increase on January 1. They don't make any profit off of that. It's all what's happening with a high price of natural gas and Vladimir Putin and the sultans in Saudi Arabia. But working with the legislature, we got some significant support for vulnerable populations, so you can apply for that. And thanks to the deal we have with Millstone, we'll be able to offer about a $15 to $20 credit off your bill, at least this winter.
Governor Lamont, you're a smart guy. I had Mitch Gross on from Eversource, and sometimes when you work directly in the industry, what seems like it's layman terms to them is not to the general population. I had asked the question of Mitch a couple of times to explain why the prices should go up for things like Russia, and it didn't really make sense. Any chance, because I had a lot of listeners who asked that after my interview with Mitch, just because we're talking about it right now, any chance you could better explain why the prices are so significantly higher, especially because we have, you know, the municipality Wallingford, for example, that they're not raising their prices. I know it's a totally different system than how Eversource and UI run things, but we keep hearing about, oh, this all stems from Russia and Ukraine and Putin and everything going on over there. But that doesn't really make sense to a lot of people.
Well, what's happening is Saudi Arabia cut back on oil production. Russia cut back or redirected their oil. And also Russia is selling a lot less natural gas into Europe for some good reasons. So that means there's more demand seeking out less supply. And you know what that means? It drives up the price of, you know, in this case, natural gas. And so I can't tell you about Wallingford, but I can guarantee you their price of inputs, which is oil and gas, have gone up a lot. Oil is beginning to come down now. You're going to see that reflected in gasoline prices over the last couple of weeks, and I think over the next couple of months. You know, fingers crossed, maybe we're bending the curve there. Electricity prices is still pretty steep. And also, Melissa, we have to import all of the natural gas, and it comes from, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, and Europe is bidding six times more than us, and that's driving up the price of gas. Gas powers our electric utilities.
We're talking to Governor Lamont this morning, taking your questions. This one from Fran in Milford. Governor, are there plans to regulate our utilities? Some of us believe deregulating it was the wrong thing to do, probably one of the worst things Connecticut ever did.
Well, right now, Fran, we obviously regulate the utilities in terms of the electric grid transmission. We limit their rate of return. We regulate that very strictly. To your bigger point, the generators, the guys that go out there and buy natural gas on the open market, are pretty much unregulated. I'm not sure that regulating them would bring down the price of a natural gas coming in from, you know, overseas, but it is something to think about.
What about giving PURA more power to be able to push back? So one of the things that we learned from Marissa Gillette was that PURA essentially can't do anything. So when Eversource and UI said a week ago, hey, we want to up our prices to this, PURA essentially, like, they could drag their feet, but they really can't even negotiate and say, no, that's just too excessive, or we can't do it with this timeline. Like, it's going to happen. Those prices are going to go into effect on January 1st. So is it a matter of giving PURA more of the opportunity to push back and negotiate?
Not necessarily. Remember, the utilities, UI and Eversource, they don't make a dime extra on this rate increase because it all is going to pay for natural gas and oil, which went up. What Melissa can do, and she does, Marissa does, and she does an amazing job over at PURA, the regulatory authority, is make sure the entire distribution system, which is like the store, that's how you get the product, that's carefully regulated to make sure there are no outsized profits there. And also, Melissa, to make sure that if these guys don't perform, if they screw up like during ICEA, they're very slow to get the power on, they pay a fine, and that goes right back to the ratepayers. That's what we did a couple years ago. Eversource paid a $200 million fine. And that went right back to the ratepayers.
We are back with Governor Lamont. And actually, in that 90-second break, Governor Lamont, I got two questions pretty similar from two different people having to do with, I think, oil supply. Ethan saying, why is Connecticut restricting fuel imports such as pipelines and phasing out waste processing facilities while we're dealing with a time of high and increasing utility costs? And I think Lynn's question is very similar, which is, why can't we use our own oil in the U.S. Instead of chasing all over the world? That might be more of a national story. That's more of a why, you know, what the president is deciding to do. But anything that you can answer on either front.
Yeah, first of all, to Ethan's question, I want to get control of our own supply chain. That's why we made the deal for carbon-free nuclear power, at least for the rest of this decade. That's why we're doing wind power. When it comes to oil and gas, I'm subject to a lot of others. So let's say I want to bring a pipeline to allow natural gas to come in from, you know, eastern Pennsylvania, or I want to bring transmission lines down to bring hydropower from Quebec into Connecticut. I can't do that by myself. I need permission of New York. I need permission of Vermont or New Hampshire, and they've all said no. So you're absolutely right. The transmission lines and the pipelines definitely limit our access. That's why it all comes in by container vessels. But we're getting away from that. That's why the nuclear, that's why the wind, that's why the solar. And I'd like to think we'll be able to get hydro here. That's our future going forward.
Only because you talked about crossing into other New England states. Here was a question. It's very unrelated, but I had gotten a few weeks back about catalytic converter thefts. Now, we had passed a law in Connecticut not too long ago to try and stop catalytic converter thefts from happening, really cracking down on the people who are collecting that metal and then giving the money out to the potential thieves who have stolen those converters. If Massachusetts and New York, if some of these bordering states don't have the same laws in place, Governor, unfortunately, we're still seeing people commit catalytic converter theft, and they're just crossing state borders to get paid, essentially. Are there any talks actively happening with the governors in our surrounding states to have the same laws in place. It seems like a no-brainer to protect everybody from it. But as long as people can cross state borders, we're going to still have the problem to some extent.
Yeah, Melissa, that's exactly right. What we did on the catalytic converters, remember, that was really bad, especially some months ago. You know, you can only put up so many lights and have so many cops patrolling the parking lots. I want to make it tougher for those bad guys to resell that catalytic converter. It's too easy to fence this stuff and get quick money for it. So, A, we worked really hard with eBay and the other social media sites. B, we told all the body shop guys, you're not buying one of these catalytic converters when a guy comes in. You're going to find out who it is, where he got it from, and get the information on that. And then your bigger point, great, Connecticut, you're doing that, but all I got to do is drive into Westchester County and they can sell it there. So we work with the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul. She followed our lead. They've put a limit on a resale of catalytic converters as well, but it's still a nationwide market. So we can do a lot regionally, but we really need help nationwide. Shut that down. Don't let them resell this stuff over the internet.
I agree. I mean, has Massachusetts responded and said that they agree, or Rhode Island or any of these other states that are within very close reach, New Jersey as well?
I think so, but I got to confirm that.
Okay. Again, we're talking to Governor Lamont this morning, taking your questions. Let's talk about heroes pay. We know that this was part of the special session yesterday and that more money is going into this. But my understanding this morning, Governor, is it's now going to depend on what your income level is. So even if everybody who applied and already got approval, it now comes down to what your income level is to see how much your bonus is going to be versus everyone getting that initially promised $1,000 bonus. So let's go back to the beginning. What happened here? How did we find out that we were so short that initially people were only getting $233 checks in the mail?
Well, it depends who you think the taxpayers should subsidize, who the taxpayers should provide heroes pay to. I thought our not-for-profit, I thought our frontline caregivers, I thought folks working in in the daycare facilities, they should get a good $1,000 bonus. And they're not working for big, rich, multi-billion-dollar companies. They're working for small companies and not-for-profits. So that's where I wanted to focus the money. You know, but from there, we expanded a little bit so that folks who work at Whole Foods at Amazon or work at Walmart or work at Electric Boat, all who showed up every day during COVID, we should provide taxpayer of subsidies for them as well. And so they're going to get some subsidies, but not a full amount. So it is graded based upon how much you earn.
I remember when you and I had chatted in, I think it was September, don't quote me on that, but I remember whenever the cutoff was for the child tax credit, I remember you and I had talked a few times and you were like, I'm kind of surprised, Melissa, not a lot of people are applying, or I thought there would be more people applying. And then we learned about Heroes Pay, and I was just curious if there was any correlation. Like, did the state kind of put it at a lower amount, saying, hey, I don't think enough people are going to even apply, so this should be a healthy amount. Here's $1,000. We know that that's the amount that we can afford based on just like the child tax credit and how little amount of people actually went for it. Was there any correlation there? Like, I'm just trying to figure out how we promise $1,000 to hundreds of thousands of people, and then we come up short as a state.
There's an inverse correlation, Melissa. It was fascinating to me that we had to knock on doors and tell parents,
I remember,
you're eligible for a $500, $750 child tax rebate. And a lot of people didn't take advantage of it. This, you know, $500 to $1,000 for, you know, heroes pay, it was oversubscribed. Mm-hmm. You know what I've learned a little bit about this? I think we do a lot with rebates and you apply and credits and subsidies. Maybe give a middle class tax cut. Just make it easier, make it automatic, and people can count on it.
I mean, I love that idea. Now, what do you mean by a middle class tax cut? Because that sounds great to me. I think I fall into that category. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, something I'm talking about with the legislature, talking about with my budget team, which is you know, folks earning between $75,000 and $175,000, see what I can do, what I can afford to perhaps reduce their income tax rates a little bit. rather than all these rebates and subsidies and credits that people have to apply for that get pretty complicated. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Governor Lamont, we got a couple more minutes left. Let's move on. So I know recently the CDC had voted for COVID vaccines to be part of the vaccine schedule for children. And a question this morning, any changes, Governor, on the horizon requiring kids to get the COVID shot in order to attend public school?
What the CDC said was they recommend it, they advise it, they think it's a good idea. I would say the exact same thing, but there's no plans and no need to mandate it. And by the way, flu, it's more like the flu vaccine. That's always been voluntary, and Connecticut is more likely to get flu vaccine than just about any state in the country. I hope we do the right thing on COVID as well, voluntarily.
But isn't flu required now as one of the mandated vaccines? I think
nope.
It is.
Nope.
Are you sure? My son was required to get it. He had to get the flu vaccine to stay in school.
No, you don't have to. Certainly there's no state requirement there. I can't tell about maybe there's a local school that, but no, there's no flu vaccine requirement. Nope.
Oh, so when we changed the law and we got rid of the grandfathered in and all of that, the flu vaccine is not included in the list of vaccines that kids have to get to go to public school? I thought that was the big controversy.
That was more for things like polio, where fewer and fewer people were getting the required polio vaccine. And all of a sudden you saw some small flare-ups of polio in this country and beyond. But no, flu was not included in that package.
Interesting. I thought that was one of the biggest controversies was like adding the flu vaccine, but maybe I misunderstood that. Okay.
Nope.
All right. I'll have to ask my son's school then why that was the case. I mean, not that he's not vaccinated. I just was curious about that. Okay. And then Governor Lamont, last question here, having to do with teachers. This is probably a much bigger question that I can't really cover in 30 seconds, but what is the state continuing to do to attract new teachers and hold on to older, but well-established teachers as well, keeping them employed in some of our school districts?
A couple of things, Melissa. One, show respect for our teachers. We have the best teachers in the world. A lot of retention is about respect, having them at the table, listening to what their concerns are. Two, getting them additional support. I'm trying to get a lot of the third-year teacher college students in the classroom as apprentice teachers, making it a little easier for teachers going forward. Three, I'm telling our municipalities, you've got an awful lot of, ARPA money. Why don't you pay your teachers a bonus in exchange for staying on for an extra couple years or to attract and hire, new teachers? So we've got to do all three of the above to continue to show teachers how much we respect what they do.
Governor Lamont, I wish I had more time with you, but I thank you so much for giving us all the time this morning that you had, and I look forward to having you on very soon. And if that's not for a little bit, I hope you enjoy the holidays with your family.
Nice to be back with you, Melissa. It's a while. Take care, everybody. Enjoy the holidays.
Thank you. You too. That's Governor Lamont here on WICC. 11.6 billion, B as in boy, $1 billion. That's according to some of the preliminary estimates this morning, as discounts on everything was just a click away, just pressing the word buy. So this year, wow, we all did good, huh? Spent a lot of money. Yeah, for sure. It's great. Here's the thing. When I see stuff like that, I think, okay, you know, as an economy, yes, we are certainly struggling and we want to give to our children. We want to give to our friends, our loved ones, our colleagues, whatever it may be. And we want to be able to spend our money that we have saved and that we've worked hard for. And we have the right to do that, right? But then we get to, and I've always had a problem with this, honestly. In all the years I've worked in news, I don't like that we leave Giving Tuesday to like the end, essentially. So you've got Black Friday, all the in-person shopping, small shop Saturday, which part of that makes you feel good, right? Because you're supporting local stores. So, okay, I can kind of get behind that one. That's cool. Cyber Monday, where people just go clicking crazy. And then you get to Giving Tuesday and people are like, you know, I'm just spent. I just don't have anything to give. And you know that scene from The Grinch Who Stole Christmas when he's like, gifts. It's all about the gifts. I think about that when we get to Giving Tuesday and I hear people go, oh, I just don't have anything to give. I just have nothing to give. So I've made it a point since being in news that every Giving Tuesday, I try to bring the attention to local nonprofits that are doing extraordinary work and that need our support desperately. They need either monetary donations or they need physical donations. And this year I was so excited because I'm always conflicted, right? Every year I'm always conflicted. I'm like, who do we talk about this year? Who do we talk about? And yesterday I'm sitting in my meeting, who's going to be on this year? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. And then a half hour later, I tell you, the good Lord, he puts me in the right place. I get this email from a woman I've never spoken to before. I've never even heard of her nonprofit before. Her name is Kara Dooley. And she's the executive director of a 501c3 nonprofit. It's called the Brighter Days Foundation. It's a pretty extraordinary story. So Kara is here this morning to tell us all about the Brighter Days Foundation and why we should get involved, not just on Giving Tuesday, but going forward. Good morning, Kara. Thank you so much for getting up early and coming on the show. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. First of all, Kara, you're not from Connecticut, right? You're not originally from here?
No, I am from Connecticut, but
I did
move away for about 15 years, and that's when my foster care journey began in Florida, actually.
What made you want to be in foster care?
Well, I remember years ago, I just had two of my own children at the time, my two older boys, and we thought about it came to the table, and we heard about fostering. We went to some event, and they had, like, a table set up, and they were giving out information about fostering. And, you know, I said to the kids on the way home, I was a single mom, and I said to the boys, would we want to help the kids? And the boys were like, of course, you know. And when I started thinking about it, I was a boy mom. I said, oh, man, a little girl would be nice, or to any, a boy or girl, wouldn't matter. It would just be a blessing to bless somebody else. So I started taking classes. I started looking into it. And this couple months ago, I took in my 60th child in care.
Your 60th?
60th. Yes. A couple months ago, I got my 60th child.
Oh, my God. Bless you. First of all, honestly, Kara, if I'm being totally open with you, so we are only having one. We have our one son who is just is a blessing, just a complete blessing.
Yeah.
But I've always teetered. My husband was adopted, so we've always teetered with the idea of fostering. But my biggest fear is, like, letting go, is giving a child back. How do you do that? How do you do 60 children? As 60 children, I should say. How did you do that? How do you do it?
So honestly, when I first started this, I started taking inmate babies, and I worked with them to take in the little ones, and I did newborns, and I would pick them right up from the hospital and keep them for a while. But, you know, my heart got broken into a million pieces because I put those little chunky rolls on that baby, and that baby cooed and looked at me with the sparkle in her eye, you know, and then all of a sudden, 7 months later, they called me and said, Kara, you know, Broward County's coming to pick up their kid. And I was like, what? No, I'm hanging up the phone, you know? So it broke my heart a few times. And then it came to the point where it was like, if I'm going to continue to do this, I have to understand I am like a glorified babysitter. You do the best you can. You give the best to the children you have in your home. You give them a safe place to lay their head until hard times are over, and either they go back to their families or they, you know, get adopted or move on to a family member, hopefully.
And you've had no foster fails, or is that even a thing? Can you foster fail?
So I foster failed. Well, I didn't foster fail, but I kind of did, because I fell in love and I adopted a sibling group of three. So I'm now a mother of seven.
Oh my Lord. Kara, you are, wow. You have seven children?
I do. I have four biological boys, and my youngest play for Ward High School here in Fairfield.
No way.
And I have four biological boys, and about while I was fostering, the first group of, I got into siblings. Mm-hmm. I really felt like siblings belong together. When they're going through times like this, they need each other. And, you know, to separate them, sometimes it happens. It has to, because they don't have placement to keep all of them together.
Yeah.
But that became, like, my goal. When kids came in, they would, you know, the workers knew, let's try Tara. Let's see if she can keep them all together. You know, when they were very bonded or very emotional. And so I got a sibling group of three. They were with me the longest in foster care. They were with me 3 years.
Wow.
When it came down to it, Montana, who's my oldest daughter, sat with her and she said, Miss Kara, who's this new worker? And I said, she's an adoption worker, sweetie. She's going to find you a family. And she looked at me and she said, Miss Kara, I don't even want to go back to my mom. And that's when I felt this pierce through my heart.
Yeah, what do you say to that?
I sat there and I pondered and I slept on it. And I was like, I have to do what's right for these babies. And I decided as a single mom to adopt all three of them. And I, yeah.
That's oh my gosh, Kara, you are, first of all, you are my hero. I think you're incredible. And
Thank you. You're
so inspiring. That's amazing. How yeah, has having foster children impacted your biological children?
I say they're pretty welcome to it. You know, they're kids. They have their moments. They get, you know, they see somebody getting something. They get an attitude about something. They give them the side eye. You know, they're all kids. They don't always agree on everything. But when it comes to in the house, my kids are very receptive to the other kids. I think they know what they're doing is right. They know sharing their home with them and sharing their mom with them is something that they need. And it's just temporary. And they, you know, they're blessed by it, so they don't really complain.
Oh, my gosh. Kara Dooley is here. She's the executive director of a 501c3 nonprofit. It's called the Brighter Days Foundation. Kara, originally from Connecticut, lived in Florida for quite some time and came back as a foster parent. And she decided last year to create this nonprofit. Tell us about that, Kara. What made you want to do this?
So I started back fostering here after, you know, the kids grew up and moved out of the house. And I was like, I only have two kids. What do I do with myself? I'm used to a house. I cook. I'm used to cooking with big pots. I cook an enormous amount of food and there's nobody to eat it. So I was like, what do I do? So I was like, you know, it's time again. It's time for me to start it again. So I came back up here. I got back into fostering and I realized there wasn't, you know, our area just doesn't have a lot of resources for some of these kids. Last Christmas, I was blessed with some amazing families who are close to me and my children that live in the Stratfield area. And they blessed, you know, they jumped in immediately and adopted my children for Christmas. And, you know, I said to them, I was like, I just thought there would be more available to the children in care. At that point, I said to them, you know what, next year, I'm going to do my own toy drive. And that's kind of where my wheels started turning and the process of the everything with Brighter Days came into play. We then started, got me a board together, and we sat and talked about what other things we can do for these kids. I talked to social workers and got information from them. You know, there's kids that are aging out in foster care and they're going into the big bad world by themselves and they're trying to find jobs, but there's no money to get them, you know, a gift card to just go buy some, you know, great, some clothes to have an interview. You know, these kids stayed in foster care and actually went to school because they can stay in what they call independent living. The teenagers, if nobody, you know, if they have nobody and they age out in foster care, they can stay in independent living. They have to continue their education, and that's, you know, and they will help them with that. But, you know, some of these kids are stepping out on their own, and they need resources. They need to know, you know, one program we want to put into play is we want to teach them how to manage their finances, balance a checkbook, talk about insurance. Let's talk about these things. You know, that's something we really are looking forward into the future if we could just get our funding together and get all this stuff rolling. We have some great ideas for Brighter Days.
So since Brighter Days is kind of in the beginning phases, Kara, what in the here and now for Giving Tuesday can our listeners do?
Well, right now, to make our program a success, we are desperately in need of funds. We are doing a toy drive, and we're asking for toys, monetary donations, or gift cards. We will be at Fairfield Ward High School, 11 to 3 this Saturday. The Fairfield Ward football boys have jumped in to help me with this great cause, and they're going to host us. We will be right there in the parking lot. This is just for Christmas for these children in Fairfield County foster care. We will go ahead and take those donations, and all of that will be donated to the local office here in Bridgeport, then get it out to the foster homes for the kids in care. But long-term, we really need, you know, that's just Christmas. We really need to get our program off the ground and rolling. And we have such great ideas. And, you know, I spoke to a person, an advocate in the Bridgeport office recently, a couple days ago. And she was like, Kara, I love what you're doing. We don't have the resources. And if you can, you know, fight and get those for us, these kids will have, you know, we'll have somebody to call when these kids, you know, hit a roadblock. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to be at Brighter Days. We want to be the person that can, you know, these kids go through enough. We don't know the trauma that they've been through when they come to us. Mm-hmm. We have no idea of what, you know, they're actually removed for sometimes and what they've actually been through. We might know what they've shared, but, you know, they're babies. They don't know how to express sometimes. And we can really, if we could change a day of their life or just get them on the track to where they need to go, you know, that would be the biggest blessing of all.
Mm-hmm. So, Kara, that drop off for the toys again is this Saturday, 11 to 3. That's at Ward High School in Fairfield. You're looking for unwrapped toys?
Unwrapped.
Brand new?
Please.
Okay, brand new.
Yes, unwrapped.
Gift cards are great too, for the teenagers especially. And then, of course, if people want to make a donation, Kara, do you have a website?
Right now, our website is under construction.
Okay.
I do have, you know, an address where they can send a check. They can come by and we'll have a Dropbox with us there. Or, you know, they can shoot me an email if it's a local business or something. I'll come to you. You know, we'd love to come by and check you out.
Okay. So, of course, if anybody has questions for Kara, if you want to contact her directly, learn a little bit more, feel free to email me. I have all of Kara's direct contact information and I can get it along to you as well. But in the meantime, if you want to do something today and you want to put your money towards children in the Bridgeport and surrounding area in foster care right now, whether it's for Christmas or just going forward for their futures, this is such an amazing nonprofit that we really don't have resources like that in the Fairfield County area. It's called the Brighter Days Foundation. So if you want to show up on Saturday, you want to talk to Kara, you want to learn a little bit more and donate, please do so. Go on over to Fairfield Ward High School this Saturday starting at 11 o'clock. And Kara, thank you again for what you do. And I look forward to seeing the Brighter Days Foundation get off the ground and do amazing work in our area.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Again, Kara Dooley, who is the executive director of the Brighter Days Foundation.
Melissa in the Morning talks with career strategist and workplace expert Julie Bauke. It's Julie on the Job. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
So some major companies like Delta Airlines, for example, have started reducing educational requirements for certain positions and have shifted hiring to focus more on people's skill set and their experience. And so there are questions now across the U.S. Will more and more companies start to drop or reduce college degree requirements? Good morning, Julie Bauke. How are you?
Good morning. And in answer to your question, I sure hope so.
Well, it's funny that you bring this topic up. Last week for Thanksgiving, we were sitting around the table and I don't know, you start to dive into like what people's futures look like. I don't know. When you're all around family, you talk about everything. And at one point, my parents had sort of hinted at me like, do you think by the time, and my son is four, by the time he goes to school, do you think he will, or by the time he enters the workforce, do you think that he's going to need, you know, a full college degree? Do you think he'll need a master's? And I kind of sat there and I said, I don't know. only because I do think there are going to be certain industries where, you know, if you're a doctor, you're always going to need it. If you're a lawyer, you're going to need it.
But, I hope so.
Right. Yeah, you would hope so. But overall, like, I look at honest to God, Julie, and this is real life. I have worked with so many people just in the radio industry who do not have a college degree and are excellent at their jobs,
yep.
Amazing at their jobs. I had no idea. Like, some of our top rated radio hosts here at Connoisseur Media did not graduate college, and they're extraordinary at their jobs. And so you're already kind of seeing it where companies are doing it, and that was when they were hired years and years ago. So it wouldn't surprise me if we headed in that direction. What do you think?
Oh, this is such a deep and rich topic. You know, when you look at, and we've talked about the talent shortage, and you know, when you back in the day, a degree was sort of employers could say, hey, if you've got one, apply. If you don't, never mind. And it was a way to kind of take the talent pool, and shrink it so that you had a manageable amount to look at. And we just sort of fell into that, and it became just a lazy way to hire. Well, you know, sorry, if you don't, you don't. And therefore, there wasn't much thought to it. Like, why are we requiring a college degree? And as you said, you know, I want my bridge builder. I want my architects and doctors and engineers and to have a degree.
Yes.
And, I mean, to have the requisite training. Because, I mean, that's just that those are certain specialties that we, you know, that we really want that. But you've got to look at each position and say, does it really require any sort of degree or advanced training? And organizations, because they're facing this, we don't have enough people for jobs, have had to look hard at their whole hiring process. And one of those things is, you know, for all of our jobs, and IBM's a great example, they went through and looked at their hiring process for all of their positions that they hire for and said, which ones really require some sort of advanced degree and which ones don't? In fact, the state of Maryland did that for their state jobs, and they saw a real surge in hiring because there were a lot more applicants, a lot more people to choose from. I mean, if I'm 50 years old and I have 28 years experience, 30 years experience, and I'm great at what I do, and I have great references, and I've got all kinds of accomplishments, and I've done really well. Does it really matter whether, you know, at age 22, I actually have a bachelor's degree or not?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a lot of cases, companies are coming to the conclusion saying, you know, it really doesn't.
So it's interesting too, Julie, because I've always had kind of a complex with even the college degree thing when, you know, when you're applying for colleges, because I can remember being in, you know, at Laurelton here in Connecticut, which is a private girls' school, a Catholic school here in Connecticut. And Laurelton's kind of known for sending their girls to pretty prestigious schools, Ivy League schools. And I remember I ended up at Champlain College. There's nothing bad about Champlain, but it's certainly not Ivy. That's all I'm going to say. It's not an Ivy League school. And I remember my parents getting crucified by, you know, by people who live here. How could you send your daughter to such a low-ranked school? Why would you spend the money? Yada, 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 all that good stuff. And then, you know, and my parents would come back and say, listen, as long as you get a college education, we don't care that you go to Ivy League. And what's funny about that is if you enter the workforce, I had other people who went to Emerson, for example, which is one of the top broadcasting schools in the country, and we're working at the same job. And so even the idea that for 30 years, you know, I'm being told it doesn't matter what college you go to, you just need a piece of paper that says I took the same classes, then, you know, that should have kind of clicked so many years ago that we don't even care what institute you're coming from. You know what I'm saying? Like that's been a true statement for however many years. Like, oh, it doesn't matter what college you come from. Just tell us that you took the classes and that suffices. Like what? That seems backwards. that alone seems backwards. I don't know. I'm just saying.
It does. Yeah. And, you know, I think we all, every listener, everyone who's listening right now, can absolutely think of someone they're working with right now or have worked with who was highly educated and had all of the fancy credentials and could not find their way out of a paper bag.
Yes.
And then others who, you know, really would, school of hard knocks or whatever you want to call it, who, like you said, are excellent. So, you know, we all know this to be true, and employers are
finally getting the message. And what it does is it opens up their a talent pool, not only to people who couldn't afford to go to school, but have made themselves a very nice career. People in maybe rural areas who never got the opportunity and work from anywhere adds to this. We now open up our talent pool to people that aren't necessarily in our geography. And so employers are looking for ways to attract more people. And so, you know, they've said, wait a minute, you know, why are we actually requiring a degree? And what's interesting is you mentioned your parents. So one of the challenges is when you look at why we are where we are from a school snobbery standpoint, there's a lot of blame to go around. You know, part of it is high school, especially, I mean, my kids went to a private high school, and there was absolutely a snobbery around where your kid went to school,
yeah.
If they went to school. And high schools, that's part of their bragging rights, right? I mean, like, 100% of our graduates went to a four-year college.
Mm.
Big whoop. And then parents, I mean, oh, really? You're going where? And
I felt so bad for my parents. I was like, I'm so sorry.
Parents. Like,
yeah.
I did a bad job parenting because my kid is just going to a two-year school. And, you know, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Really think about it.
It is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It really is. So Julie on the job this morning, Julie Bauke, who is our career strategist on the morning show, is talking about whether or not we'll need a college degree for jobs in the future. Not all, but most of them are kind of like, do we really need this anymore? So that leads me to this question, Julie, which I don't know if this is out of your pay grade, but I'm going to ask anyways. Do you think if more companies start to go, you know, we don't really need it anymore, that students are going to go, then I don't really need to go to college anymore? And the reason I say that is, and I've been very open with my listeners, I would do high school over 100 times. I loved high school. Amazing experience. I grew as a person. As I mentioned, it was an all-girls school. So I grew as a woman. I found myself. I was confident. I learned a lot. It was a great school. If I never had to go back to college again, great. I really was not a partier. I really could care less. I loved my school. But if you told me, 18-year-old Melissa, hey, you know what, do an internship for 2 years, or hey, why don't you go to community college, just do the required courses you have to do, and then get a job on the side, and then we'll give you a full-time gig in broadcasting, I would have been like, sign me up. Save me the $100,000 or whatever it was at the time and sign me up. I would have skipped college if I could have. But that was just not the way of the world when I was going to college. So do you think more people would have that mentality of, listen, I'd rather do job training or do gap years and get experience to get the job if I don't need the college degree or to put the money out for it?
Absolutely. And you just hit on it. Student debt. I mean, look at what the student debt numbers are. So, you know, think about it. It is how many kids go to college simply because that's the thing to do.
That's what you do, right.
It's a very expensive place to sit for 4 years to find yourself. So there's just simply the cost. But now let's talk about trade schools. A two-year degree that leads directly to a job.
Mm-hmm.
The point of advanced education beyond high school is job.
Is they land you a job, yeah.
Right? And so, you know, I think we have to start encouraging students to look at things other than a four-year school, an online certificate. You can pay, I think it's not much. Well, it's more than, you know, it's more than most of us had sitting in our checking account, but things like boot camps to learn to code. You know, you can make a bunch of money as a coder, and they're greatly in demand. In fact, Google is, from what I've heard from others, and I don't know this is a fact, that Google was, you take their boot camp and, you know, they're going to have their first choice of who to hire. And so we have to look at college as a direct line, or advanced education as a direct line to employment.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many great jobs out there in the trades that do not require anything other than a certificate, a year or two of school. Or then some companies will actually, you know, pay for you to do that because they're so desperate to hire good people. And so, you know, the whole idea that I'm automatically going to go to a place and spend, you know, what can be $100,000 to $200,000 and then come out, you know, still, in a lot of cases, not knowing what I want to do and not necessarily having a direct line to a job. There are a lot of 22-year-olds living in their parents' basement, so to speak, who have a degree, who have no better idea what they want to do for their first job than they did 4 years ago. And that's an awful expensive way to, quote unquote, find yourself. And so as a parent, I think, you know, requiring or at least, you know, setting the expectation that when junior goes off to college, that there's going to be some real thoughts in the next 4 years. You have to meet with the career planning and placement office. We have to do internships. You have to get out and meet with people and start learning about careers. Instead of sending them on their merry way, fall after they graduate from high school, and then hoping upon hope that in 4 years they walk out with some idea what they want to do. And it's just, it's not like a magic factory. It doesn't work that way. And you know, I think we forget that. And kids are like, oh, I'm going to go to college just because everybody else is. And they're majoring in something that isn't necessarily going to lead to a job and, you know, maybe getting mediocre grades, but having a lot of fun. And believe me, I am not against fun, because I had lots of fun and my grades weren't great. But I figured it out. And so, you know, what is that going to be so that your 22-year-old doesn't sit in your basement with $100,000 plus in debt and, you know, working at Starbucks? And there's nothing wrong with working at Starbucks, but you've got to put some thought into what is it you want to do. Your mission in college should be to figure out what you want to do and do the things required: internships, meet with people, get some, you know, some part-time jobs, meet with the guidance counselors, to figure out what is that first job going to be. Look, if you're an accounting degree, if you're an accounting major, yeah, that's a clear path to a great job. But, you know, not all of us are going to be accounting majors.
Exactly. And yeah.
So there's got to be some thought put into it, because that's a very expensive that's a very expensive place to sit for 4 years.
It's so true. Julie Bauke, our career strategist. I always appreciate chatting with you. Julie on the Job every week here on WICC. Thank you so much.
All right. Talk again next week.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. That's Julie Bauke again here on Melissa in the Morning.